edition of our Retro View podcast here on the Barber's Chair Network. Chris Novak joined, of course, by Chris Osborne and Rob O'Neill here. We are in the thick of a very busy sports night here. The NBA draft's going on. The trade deadline is steadfast approaching. The Dodgers apparently just made are making a blockbuster deal for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. So there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
Lots going on.
The Lakers are getting Russell Westbrook. So
yep.
Big night. Had to get this banged out though, because we are hitting the road tomorrow.
We are hitting the road tomorrow. Going up to Rob's neck of the woods and hitting the WWE Super Show in Milwaukee at Fiserv Forum. I'm excited to get to Fiserv for the first time. We're also seeing Krista.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a good time. It sounds like Bobby Portis is also going to be there.
Yeah, that'll be amazing.
You kind of felt like they were going to do something with that, right? Like, especially after they won. Like, it's just a slam dunk.
Yeah. So it was sort of weird, though, because, I listened to the Le Batard show, and Bobby Portis was just on it, I think, this week, and he was already back in Arkansas. So I was like, oh, maybe he's not going to. But then when he put out the tweet, like, a couple of days ago, I was like, oh, okay, so he is going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. John Cena's going to be there. Wasn't expecting that when we got the tickets. Yeah. So, yeah. But
this will be my first time seeing John Cena. I've never seen Cena live.
Really?
Wow. That is surprising.
I mean, I had a very big lull in seeing shows. So, like, I didn't start going back to see wrestling events until 2019. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Yes, that's definitely fair.
I've seen Cena face Punk and Ryback, and then Bray Wyatt in a Last Man Standing match.
And you also saw him at Mania.
Yes.
The lights.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to see his return at the 08 Rumble.
Yeah.
Still one of the great moments in my wrestling fandom history. Speaking of great moments in wrestling, we are highlighting over one of the biggest moments in professional wrestling history. Doesn't matter what era or decade we're talking about here. Talking about Bash at the Beach 96, but you've probably heard the story of Bash at the Beach 96 a million times over, so we decided we wanted to change it up here. We're not just talking about Bash at the Beach, we're talking about the immediate aftermath as well. We're talking about a couple of editions of Nitro that finished out the month of July from Disney MGM Studios, and including the last episode of the month of July, which featured a very famous moment in wrestling television.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's cool to do it this way instead of just focusing on the event, because, you know, it's a good pay-per-view, but obviously everyone just focuses on the end of it. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, watching the rest of the month kind of adds context and kind of made me want to keep watching Nitro from that era as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. I know, when I finished the last episode, I like remembered more of what's going to happen. I had to keep watching, so I did end up watching, I think, like the next two or three to get by.
I mean, we can kind of just get right into it here. And you know, it's nice too, because, you know, we just did a 1996 show, you know, it was with the WWF, but we kind of got into some stuff that we'll follow up on with that. And then, you know, some other stuff too, but kind of before we get to Bash at the Beach, we have some stuff from the Observer here from July 1st. War has been declared. War has been accepted. Those are the main catchphrases of the top angle this week in WWF and WCW. This has nothing to do with the angle on television and everything to do with the angle on television, because Titan Sports is suing Turner Broadcasting. Which, I mean, you know, if you watch it, like, Kevin Nash isn't doing Diesel, but Scott Hall is 100% doing Razor.
Oh, he is.
So,
he can't really help himself.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've ever seen the Great American Bash segment, from when, you know, Nash jackknife powerbombed Bischoff through the table, he's got the same mannerisms.
Yeah,
he's still doing the toothpick stuff and all that. Like, Nash, at least, he's basically easy to distinguish. Hall, he can't quit that right now.
Yeah, but no, this is great, because we get a press release from Vince basically saying, you know, they're just a mom and pop wrestling company, that, you know, they have to go up against this big bad billionaire now. You know, it's just interesting kind of looking back, and, you know, it's kind of plays off of what happened with Ric Flair when he jumped in 1991, where he still had the NWA title, and they you know, had lawsuits, but they had storyline reasons for it. And yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, it's an interesting time for wrestling, pretty much all of 1996 and 1997, for as much as people are like, oh, the Attitude Era is actually bad. There's just so much going on. Like, it's cool to look back at all of it.
Indeed.
And to be fair, I think when people say that the Attitude Era was bad, they don't really talk about the seminal moments.
Yeah.
They talk about like, the middling stuff and definitely most of 1999 stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that, and I think people, especially today, we enjoy the in-ring product so much more than what it used to be. And the Attitude Era to me is all about the angles. It's all about the surprises. I mean, I'm not watching Attitude Era stuff for the work rate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like that's a big disconnect from fans today who don't like the Attitude Era as much or can't separate the two.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, to be fair, your point about the work rate, you know, it kind of reminds me just of, you know, how, you know, maybe things appeared like they were better for sports back in the 90s and the late 80s. Now people make comparisons often, but you could argue that the athletes now are better, but that's just because of human evolution.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, of course the wrestlers are going to be better workers now. Of course, it's a higher standard being raised because that's just how, that's just how society, how life progresses.
Yeah. Dave continues here. As for the identity of the third party at the main event, it's really a secret. Lex Luger was the original plan, but it seems too close to the Steve McMichael turning on Kevin Green to join the Four Horsemen angle that they just ran. Bischoff, Hall, and Nash were discussing names this past week with Mabel as the top candidate. Crush being considered for a brief period and then dismissed. All agreed Bret Hart would be the best candidate, and WCW even floated the idea on the hotline. Because he doesn't technically have a contract with WWF at the moment, which is a whole thing that everyone just kind of overlooked. But Bret Hart turned down every offer thrown his way. Bischoff has told in the past few days Hall and Nash to trust him on this one, but admitted that if they bring in someone other than Bret Hart, and it's not going to be Bret Hart, it'll come as a letdown. Could also be another wrestler already in the company. So, yeah, a lot of moving parts here. Mainly because the guy that it ends up being isn't there week to week because he's filming a movie, which we'll get into in a little bit as well.
Well, isn't that what Bret Hart's doing too? Isn't he filming like Lonesome Dove or something?
Yes.
During this period.
But the only difference is he actually doesn't have a contract with WWF through the end of July, which is kind of weird, like, because they weren't going to just let him walk. So it's confusing how he just ended up not having a contract. But, you know. July 8th, the future of the Ultimate Warrior in the World Wrestling Federation is in question again after missing several weekend house shows after the death of his father, which, you know, the only thing with that is he was never close with his father and just didn't tell anyone he wasn't showing up for any of these shows. So that will be the end of the Ultimate Warrior in the World Wrestling Federation, even though they try to get him back next winter. After Bret leaves, which is weird.
I mean, this run, that 96 run, though, with Warrior is just so bizarre in hindsight to, like, watch back. Because, like, he doesn't fit. Like, he's stuck in, like, a bygone era. Like, he's so much of the past that they need to move forward from that he just doesn't fit.
Yeah, and that's interesting, like, seeing how a guy like that would have carried over into the Attitude Era, which is something that I'm actually going to get into again in a little bit with someone else. Everything would have been a lot different if he stuck around, because, like, he's not a fit. Like, we saw he's not a fit just in the little, like, part that he was in, but also, like, can you imagine a 1996 Ultimate Warrior against 1996 Shawn Michaels match?
How about Warrior against Austin, like a top heel Austin as like a trying to be a main event?
Yeah, match. Exactly. Like, it just doesn't work.
No.
But yeah, we can get into Bash at the Beach for now. We do have some other stuff coming up after, but for now, get into it from Daytona Beach, Florida, July 7th, 1996. We got Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes, our host. Mike Tenay will pop in per usual.
What I always found interesting is they put Dusty on the pay-per-views, but he's never on the mic
post. Well, because he's not good at commentary.
I mean, he's not good at it, but I'm just, it's just interesting to me how that, and that kept going for a while.
Yeah, it did.
For them, too.
It did.
Like, he was strictly just a pay-per-view commentator. Up until, I want to say, sold out 98 when he joined the NWO.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it too before, like having Dusty and Heenan at the same time is a little just too much. They're too much of the same shtick, trying to get their own stuff in that, like,
yeah,
it's just too much on commentary.
And no disrespect to Dusty, Heenan's just still so far and away better than him at it. So
yeah,
he's just a commentator at this point, right? Because he's
just a commentator. He's not a wrestler, performer, manager. Like I said, he eventually joins the NWO in 1998. Spoiler alert. For you, Rob, because you've never watched this stuff before. he joins as a mentor of Scott Hall.
Yeah, and then creative, it's pretty much just Bischoff.
Yeah.
With a couple other guys.
Yeah, he's got like the committee. It's weird because I was trying to listen to 83 Weeks about this because it's like the first episode of 83 Weeks, and Bischoff, his podcasts are so hard to listen to. But I know he says Kevin Sullivan is on the booking. Like, there definitely is a committee still.
Yeah.
But like, he even toys, like, he even says he didn't tell the committee who the third man was. Like, a lot of it is very secretive, very much like Bischoff trying to protect the storyline to himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tried to, I listened to the formation of the NWO 83 weeks, and then I had the Bash at the Beach one open. I'm like, I'm not going to listen to 3 more hours of Eric Bischoff.
It's so hard.
He's not like bad at it. He just,
you know, what's weird is I think that him and Jeff Jarrett's podcasts are pretty much like the same thing because they go into a lot of detail. They try to give you long-winded answers, but I just find Jeff so much more likable that I can watch or listen to his podcast.
Yeah.
I can't do it with Eric.
No. So we get into our first match where Mike Tenay gets on commentary because we get Psychosis against Rey Mysterio. And this is Psychosis, I believe, not his debut, but it's one of his first matches in WCW.
I do believe so, yes. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's got to be close because, spoiler alert, because he's on one of the next Nitros.
Yes.
But his Nitro match is his first Nitro match. So I'm assuming that maybe he was on a Saturday show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that is correct. Let's see here if I can go into the archives real fast. His first WCW, actually, this is his first WCW match.
No, wow.
It is indeed, because before, actually, no. Okay, so he actually had debuted in January of 96 at Clash of the Champions number 32, in which he lost a Mexican heavyweight title match to Conan.
Mm.
Oh.
That was the first time that he appeared in WCW television.
No?
Not to get too off track, but I was hoping that we'd get Psychosis instead of Hoovy for Jericho's match next week.
Yeah, that would have been nice, but you know.
I mean, Hoovy's got more history though, so yeah.
Exactly. But, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I really like the set, you know. It's
the set is awesome.
Very cool. You know, Dusty called Ray the future of the sport, which I thought was cool since he's still wrestling now.
I mean, it's hard.
I mean, yeah.
What Ray represents is absolutely the future of wrestling in terms of the athletic, high-flying luchador style and just the kind of athleticism that he brings.
Well, yeah, and it obviously, you know, wasn't on American television at this point. So, like, to have this match and then, you know, Jericho comes in, I think, later in August and he's doing the same stuff early on. Yeah. And it is pretty cool. Like, they have Eddie Guerrero, who I think is early in his run there. It's cool that they're, you know, showcasing these guys. And that's something Bischoff kind of talked about, like, you know, he watched New Japan when he was over there and he really liked the presentation. He liked stuff they were doing and just kind of tried to copy that. And it kind of shows, you know? Yeah. And, you know, this is one of those matches where they just let Mike Tenay do most of the work and everyone else just gets their shit in.
I was wondering, because I'm doing a Nitro rewatch, just gone through the painful Starrcade 97 go home show. It's just such a doozy. We're at the point where Tenay is doing the informational packages about Lucha Libre, which I thought were always a treat to watch. He's showing off his game for sure.
Yeah, no, Mike Tenay's good. I hope he's well. I don't know what he's up to these days.
He's in Vegas. He does a lot of sports gambling stuff now.
Yeah,
we should hang out with him.
Yeah,
he's a big baseball fan, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
That is correct too. Yes.
Nice. Yeah. But yeah, no, really good match. Rey Mysterio does a Hurricane Rana from the apron to the floor, which I thought was very cool. Yeah. You know, Rey's also only 21 here. So again, Dusty just calling his shot there.
He nailed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they got some time. The crowd wasn't super into it at first, but they won him over. And then Psychosis went for Splash Mountain. Rey hits a Frankensteiner and got the win.
Yeah, you talk about how the crowd wasn't into it, but like, when with the stuff that they're doing now, it seems so regular now. But these people, they didn't see this kind of stuff.
No.
They were wowing these folks week in and week out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, because this was on ECW already, right?
It was,
like this
yeah.
sort of
they,
thing,
they
but
yeah. went through ECW, but obviously ECW was kind of
still, yeah, kind of regional or at midnight.
Regional syndicated television at late nights of the hour,
mm-hmm.
or late hours of the night, I should say.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll have to see if I think I have it somewhere in my archives, but Rey and Psychosis had a trilogy down in Mexico, like that just got real big acclaim down there, and then they brought it. That's what. Brought them to ECW, and then they repeat it here for WCW.
And then they have a pretty bad match at One Night Stand 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the crowd
beats
way for no particular reason.
Yeah, well, you know.
I thought the dives, there was like the scary one with Psychosis going, just plunging, doing the plancha over the top head first. And then Rey, I thought, like almost broke his, like could have broke his knee on the, I think it was the acai moonsault
mm-hmm.
to the outside, and he hit the guardrail, and it's just like, what are they doing? And then to think Rey's still wrestling, you know, 25 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. And he's still pretty good. Like, yeah. He doesn't seem like, I mean, he doesn't do like all the stuff he used to do, but he doesn't seem like a guy that's like lost too much, right? Like, mm-hmm. Mean Gene's in the back with Conan, who is the current U.S. champion. He wrestled Mexico last night, but he's here. He's ready to defend his title against Ric Flair. But before that, we got Big Bubba against John Tenta in a Carson City Silver Dollar match, which features a sock full of silver dollars at the top of like a 30-foot-tall pole.
You know, these both guys are both pretty cool. Big Bubba's a selling machine, but... isn't that great?
No, it's not great, and it's very clear that neither of them are going to climb to the top, so they send Jimmy Hart to the top, and Jimmy Hart, who is 55 years old here, by the way, which is crazy.
You know what else is crazy? Tenta's only 32, and Boss Man's only 33.
Yeah, no, both those guys are so young.
So young. They're like five, they're like what, Tenta's five years removed from Hogan's run, and Boss Man's 3 years removed from his last babyface run in WWF, and it just seems like they're like, you know, decades removed. Like how fast it's crazy to me how fast it seems that wrestling changed over in the 90s, but I feel like hasn't done that since. Like, you know, I mean, you look at, I mean, CM Punk's coming back probably, right? Like,
yeah,
this is, I mean, 7 years later and he wouldn't be, you know, doesn't not fit. It's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Jimmy Hart climbs all the way to the top of this pole, gets the sock, and he drops it, but John Tenta grabs it and hits Bubba with it, gets the pin. So, didn't work out for Jimmy Hart.
It did not.
Sting, Randy Savage, and Lex Luger with Mean Gene. They don't care who the third man is, because they're going to take him out, save WCW. Well, good luck. Get DDP against Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
DDP before he's really DDP.
Yes.
Of course.
And, Hacksaw's WCW music, which is the mayor's music from Back to the Future.
I never actually put that.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
DDP gets a pretty quick win with a diamond cutter. Hacksaw punches him with a taped fist after.
That taped fist will loom large later on these nitros also.
Yes.
I just have to question like who booked the card and thought, let's do that silver dollar match and then the taped fist match right after each other.
Yeah.
And then the next match, too.
Jimmy Hart, Kevin Sullivan, and the Giant are with Mean Gene. Gene says the Horseman will probably cut off the ring and not let Sullivan tag Giant in, but Kevin Sullivan says it'll be fine. Giant says that Kevin Sullivan's the backbone of the Dungeon of Doom, and the Horsemen aren't elite, but the Giant is. Giant's the champion at the moment, by
he
the way.
He is the champion, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of gets overshadowed on these month of shows.
It kind of does.
You know.
It kind of does.
Elsewhere, Lee Marshall's with Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit. Arn says he's not a fan of Sting, Luger, or Savage, but he's rooting for them tonight. First things first, Arn's ready for Kevin Sullivan and the Giant tonight. Benoit says he's silent but violent. He's going to leave Kevin Sullivan for dead.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's not great. We get Public Enemy against the Nasty Boys in a four-man dog collar match where they're pretty much all chained together.
You know, I will say, when it comes to this, these brawls and these like street fights or whatever, WCW is pretty good at them.
Yeah, no, this one's fun. You know, the Harlem Heat against Nasty Boys one we watched is very fun.
Sullivan and Benoit have a pretty decent one. They also have a big fight on an episode of Nitro later on in '96 where they go in the bathroom.
Yeah,
and all around the crowd too. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, like Rocco Rock jumped off the lifeguard chair. That was cool. Jerry Sags hit a pile driver on concrete, which you probably shouldn't do, but you know. And then they ended up back in the ring, and the Nasty Boys got the win. And Tony Schiavone said it was a mess, which it was, but it was fun.
All right, but I have to ask that after the aftermatch one, the aftermatch hit with the chain, like, do you think he was really shooting? Because he hit him square in the head, hit Knobs at least. Yeah. That was a bad one.
No, it's not great, but I mean, you know, Brian Knobs is one of those people where he can rub you the wrong way very easily. So, you know.
Agreed. But it's probably not best to hit a friend of Hogan.
Yeah, that's true. We move on to Cruiserweight title match, Disco Inferno against Dean Malenko. Really don't care for either of these guys. For different reasons, but I mean, Dean Malenko seems fine. He's just boring.
I can't believe you think Dean Malenko's boring. You have not watched enough of that, man. That's what that tells me.
Yeah, well, you know. He retained his title, so.
Yeah.
That's good.
Thankfully.
Yeah. We get Mongo in action against the Desperado Joe Gomez, who I had not heard of before this, which is rare. You don't get too many people I haven't heard of. Mongo's very good, though. Big Mongo fan.
This went better than I expected, actually.
It was fine. You know, they kept it short, and they kind of focused on the things that Mongo's good at, and then he hit a tombstone and got the win, so.
Yeah.
Mean Gene is with Elizabeth, Woman, and Ric Flair. Flair's ready to win the U.S. title tonight. He just screams about a lot of stuff for a while. Conan may know 1,000 holds, but Flair has unlimited wrestling knowledge. It's time for Conan against Ric Flair.
Yeah. Woman and Mean Gene were, like, amazing the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah.
They really were.
Conan did a surfboard and bow and arrow. I enjoy both those moves because they look very painful.
Yes.
Ric Flair is the ref distracted, and Woman kicks Conan in the groin. Flair distracts the ref again, and then Woman hits Conan with her shoe, and Flair gets cover and uses the ropes and wins the title.
He does.
There was a Conan hit, like, I don't know if it was inadvertent or what, but, like, I think it was. He, like, knocked into Liz and knocked her down on the outside, and I can only imagine the tongue lashing that he got from Randy Savage after that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know they're not together, but how protective he is of her. There's no way that he did not get talking to.
Yes.
Conan's bad. Conan's bad. That's my takeaway of watching these WCW shows is I don't think I've seen a good Conan match, and I don't know if one exists.
I have definitely never seen a good Conan match. He's a good talker. He's got that going for him, but as far as his matches go, pass.
Yeah, I thought as a kid I was like I liked him, but then I'm watching it now and I'm just like, yeah, it was definitely just the charisma.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's definitely the charisma. It's definitely, you know, the catchphrases and whatnot. You know how to work a crowd, but everything else just never really clicked.
Yeah. Trying to see, like, his highest rated match here. Let's see.
Yeah, maybe some of his Mexico stuff. Like, I don't think I've watched probably maybe any of his stuff with AAA or anything, so...
Yeah.
His highest one is a battle royal or whatever, Triple Mania.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, you know.
Like after that, a match in '94 in AAA against Perro Aguayo got 6.9 on the cage match or whatever. His highest rated.
Oh, wow.
His highest rated one in WCW even on, you know, from the wrestler term newsletter, was 3 3/4 against Juventud Guerrero on September of 96.
Mm. Well, you know. Huh.
Well, that'll be coming up then for me.
The outsiders are in a locked room. Mean Gene's been eavesdropping. The third voice sounds familiar. It's muffled and you can't place it. Hmm. Well, you know what? If it's Hulk Hogan, you would be able to place it, pal. So, what are you doing? Chris Benoit and Arn Anderson face Kevin Sullivan and the Giant. Benoit and Arn attack Sullivan during his entrance. Giant doesn't come out right away to help. Giant chokeslams Arn for the win, and then Benoit and Sullivan kind of just brawl to the back. Benoit tackles Sullivan into the sand, and then they brawl back to the ring. Benoit starts kicking him as woman begs Chris Benoit to stop. It's time for the main event. Sting, Lex Luger, and Randy Savage against Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and a mystery partner.
Michael Buffer here.
Yes, that's a bummer. Hall and Nash come out first. It's time for the third man, but no one comes out. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash said that they don't need him right away. They can just handle it. They beat up Lex Luger a bunch, and he leaves on a stretcher, so now it's even. Sting does a lot of really good babyface work in this match.
Oh, yeah. His comeback spot, Savage coming in, is great stuff.
Yes. And Savage is able to hold his own against Hall and Nash, but Nash takes him out with a low blow.
Oh, no.
So Sting's in some trouble, and then Hulk Hogan comes out. Bobby Heenan wants to know which side is he on. Which, listen, I've talked about this before. It was fine. Like, it's fine that he doesn't trust Hogan, because he never trusted Hogan.
Exactly. He's basing it off of, what, like 8 years of, you know, being against Hogan. Like, why would he ever think that Hogan was coming down for WCW or to help them out?
Also, like, I get that, like, you know, you don't expect Hogan to turn heel, but pretty clearly, like, they have a third man, they're running out of time on the show, and a guy comes out, like, it's kind of, maybe it's a hindsight, but it's kind of obvious that,
yeah,
you know.
Because it's just, I think it's a perspective thing on how people used to consume wrestling versus how it is more now. Mm. Because even before when I, you know, because I, you know, I think I had said this once on one of these shows that, like, I asked, you know, people, like, okay, when did you know, or when did you start to think about, you know, when Bischoff was the one who was, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes before the big reveal with Piper? And everyone pretty much said when the reveal happened. Even though there were plenty of hints dropped of, like, you know, he was acting real suspiciously. But, you know, back in 96, I don't think people were consuming it like we do now, where we have all these fan theories and whatnot and all this, like, investigating and stuff like that. So I think to that degree, it was pretty shocking in that regard. You could put two and two together, but at the same time, it's just like, for a guy like Hogan at that point in time, who had gone, you know, like 13 years or whatever without being a heel, you couldn't picture it in your mind.
Yeah, that's fair. So the outsiders get the win. Fans throw garbage in the ring, to which I said, you know, fans don't throw garbage in the ring anymore, and now they do again. So, you know, we're back to throwing garbage in the ring. Mean Gene says that Hogan joining Hall and Nash makes him sick to his stomach, and Tony Schiavone tells Hogan to go to hell and signs off. Fair? I mean...
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good show. You know, obviously, I remembered a lot for the ending, but it is entertaining for the most part. I mean, there's a down period in the middle of it, but, you know, they did a really good job setting up the story. You know, Eric Bischoff not being there was interesting. Yeah, so, you know, I kind of picked up a couple things from, you know, the Broken Skull sessions that Nash was on in 83 weeks. You know, Nash would have stayed if Vince would have matched the offer, but Vince wasn't going to do that at that time. Then Bret Hart refusing to take the jackknife kind of pushed Nash to ask Hall if he could get a deal with WCW. Sting was making $750,000 when Hall and Nash came in, so they made $500,000, which was what Flair was making because Bischoff didn't want to pay them as much as he paid Sting, which makes sense, I guess. But then, you know, they had the clauses in their contract where if someone else came in and made more money than they did, their pay went up to that number, which is smart because that would happen a lot in the future.
Yeah.
And then Bischoff said it was always going to be Sting or Hogan. Once Hogan agreed, they just kept Sting as a backup plan in case Hogan decided not to do it after having some time to think it over. Which is an interesting hypothetical, too, because, you know, Hogan's contract is up kind of in the fall of 1996, and he pretty clearly, like, did everything there was to do in WCW already, and the ratings were fine, you know, when he was filming his movie or whatever. So it's like, if he doesn't join the NWO, do they just let him leave? And if they let him leave, what does he do? Because, like, you know, we kind of talked about it with Warrior, like, it's hard to see Hulk Hogan as a fit in the Attitude Era at WWF as well, if there even is an Attitude Era at that point.
Yeah, I'd be really, especially if he went back to WWF, because, like, I know, like, Bruce says on his podcast a lot, he wanted to turn Hogan heel, you know, at, like, Mania 8 and 9, like, any time after that to do a heel turn. So, like, would they have turned him heel if they signed him, if brought him back, you know? Because that's the only thing that makes sense. I don't think Hogan's character works that way as a top guy, as a top babyface in that era.
Yeah, because if you put, like, you know, the late 80s, early 90s Hogan in that, you know, 1996 WWF, it's like we talked about with Warrior, where he's not going to match up with Michaels or, you know, Austin in any sort of way, where he's just going to look like a dork the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I would have loved, though, Austin Hogan at that point, just to see Austin go into like his ECW Hogan shtick and start and ranting on him for that.
Oh yeah.
Like that would have been amazing. But yeah, I just don't see, I think the heel turn was such a necessity for the Hogan character and the Hogan presentation. Cause it just had been so long. It was a whole decade pretty much of that.
Yeah.
And it was wearing off in WCW. Like his WCW numbers weren't going up. They were stagnant, if not going down most of the time.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like everyone was just kind of tired of seeing him from what I can tell. Like, you know, the Dungeon of Doom stuff's not good.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know, man. Like he needed to change. And I think that's why they were able to pitch it to him. Cause if he didn't do it, it's hard to see him re-upping there. Because I'm sure, like, if he wanted to re-up, he wasn't going to come cheap either. That's the other thing. And that could play into the WWF part, too. Like, could they afford him in 1996?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think so.
I don't know if he would have, like, went to acting full-time, or...
I don't know how long that would have lasted either for him. But it's weird, though, because if you look at his contract, I looked at it for 97, he is like, I don't know if he just doesn't make a lot of appearances or something, but he's under 400,000.
Oh, wow.
And it's noted on there, like, that's not a typo. Like, that is what the contract says, like, or all the details say.
What if it's like a Randy Savage situation where they got someone else to pay it for a year? I don't know who would have, though.
Yeah, I don't know. But I saw that and I was like, wow, that seems really out of the ordinary.
Yeah. So then kind of getting after Bash at the Beach, back to the Observer here. Hogan agreed to do the heel turn about 11 days before the show, largely because there was no place left for him in WCW had he not done it, kind of like we just got into. In Hogan's usual great knack of timing, he left WCW to do a movie with Roddy Piper and Gary Busey right before the NBA playoffs changed the Nitro time slot and wreaked havoc on the ratings. Yeah, again, we talked about it. Like, think what you want about him, but he knew how to play the game, man. You know, he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. He knew when Monday Night Football started. He knew all that stuff.
However, in the expansion to 2 hours, the show's ratings have increased to their consistently highest level to date without Hogan on any of the shows, which weakened his leverage position a little bit. But, you know, at the end, proved to be the ultimate Fox once again. The angle on the surface appears to be the hottest angle in the history of WCW. And Hogan, who a few weeks ago looked like a real outsider, maneuvered himself back into being the centerpiece. You know? And then also, at the moment, WCW is talking about bringing in Chris Jericho, which they will end up doing shortly later. Mm-hmm. Tentative site for WrestleMania 13 is the United Center in Chicago. It's not a building that they run wrestling in.
Nope. They did it one time for SummerSlam 94, and that's it.
Yeah. A couple house shows, a couple nitros, and now the first dance.
Which is kind of silly because it's the second episode of Rampage.
Well, it's based on the I last dance.
I understand, but like, you know, from that perspective, it is kind of silly.
Yeah, it is, but it's cool that they're running that building. It's an important building. Yeah. You know, it's an important market, and the.
I will say, good luck to get people to go at 9 o'clock on a Friday.
They will. I think they'll sell it out because
you really think they're going to sell it out for an hour long show?
Yeah, because Punk's going to be back. Like it's.
But also okay, that's
not. Yeah. Anyway, we can get into.
we do that next week.
Yes.
Well, I will say if we're talking about like Last Dance and everything, it's not as bad as Aaron Rodgers and Devonta Adams posting that picture. So it's all good.
Oh man, that's when I knew they were back. By the way, like oh, they're gonna come back for one more year. And
oh yeah, that's all that made sense to me was okay, this is the last season, but yeah, he's coming back. Oh, there's no way he was gonna sit out anyways.
No. All right, we can get into Nitro. July 8th, 1996 from Disney MGM Studios, which, again, you know, you should run wrestling in amusement parks all the time, especially when you're not even in a studio. You're just outside, like, the main gate. Very cool. Every time they show the Tower of Terror shot, like, just super cool. Big fan. Tony Schiavone and Larry Zbyszko are going over what happened last night and are disgusted with Hulk Hogan the second hour. They will show pictures from the event. So... Ooh. Stay tuned.
You gotta get that Tuesday night replay money.
You know, I thought it was kind of like a ridiculous thing to do, but I guess people would order the replays, right? Like the NBA playoffs are going on. You know, you got the Olympics. I think had started. It's some people are still out of town for 4th of July. Like they probably did a pretty good number on the replay.
It's not something you can go online. It's not like today where. Somebody will post it on YouTube or Daily Motion where you can find out like and see or watch little clips like WWE's not putting out, you know, wouldn't put out little clips on the internet. You know, the internet's not too big. So it's something that's a viable thing for them.
And plus, like, I know they're both school nights and whatnot, but like, you know, Sunday nights, it feels like people would want to try and start the week off, you know, as well as they possibly could and not stay up on a Sunday, but they can afford.
Yeah. Well, it's not a school night. It's July,
well, yeah, it's but... July. Yeah, you get what I'm trying to say. So mm-hmm. Week off right for work, whereas on Tuesday, you know, 2 days in, let's just watch this and just take Wednesday and see what happens.
Yeah.
No, yeah, they always did those pay-per-view replays on Tuesdays. So.
Yeah. So we open with, oh, by the way, they are running these shows at Disney MGM Studios for the whole month because Turner has basically all their production people doing the Olympics in Atlanta, which I didn't realize till earlier today. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we start with Rey Mysterio against Dean Malenko. Malenko is defending his Cruiserweight title again. Once again, not a fan of Dean Malenko, but Rey Mysterio is very good. Tony wants us to call everyone we know and tell them that they're going to show pictures of Bash at the Beach in the second hour. Malenko suplexes Mysterio out of the ring. Thought that was pretty cool. Rey did a springboard moonsault on the outside that kind of missed everything. Yeah, not great. Rey hits Hurricanrana and pins Malenko to win the Cruiserweight title. And a guy in the crowd has a puppet that is the genie from Aladdin going crazy with the puppet. Hilarious visual. Mean Jeans with the Nasty Boys and the Steiner Brothers. So that's something that stood out to me about these shows is that there are like 6 interview segments per night.
Yeah.
Mean Gene, staying busy, man.
Yeah, he's earning that paycheck.
Nasty Boys and Steiner Brothers will have a number one contenders match tonight to see who will face Harlem Heat and Hog Wild. We get some vignettes for Glacier. Very cool. I mean, it's cool when they don't show him. When they show him later and he's just doing like shitty martial arts stuff, it's not cool and it's very clear why he's not going to work out, but you know.
He's doing shitty sidekicks and stuff. It's like, oh yeah.
Looking like a weird Mortal Kombat character.
So bad too, because like I said, I've said this before, but like Glacier and Mortis, man, in the production quality of like 2020 and 2021, like that would be amazing.
Well, yeah, because like the Blood Runs Cold stuff is very cool. Like it's different than what most people were doing at that time. Like it's intriguing, and then yeah, just Not great. We get Lord Steven Regal, Squire Dave Taylor against Hugh Morris and Big Bubba. Regal and Taylor get the win after John Tenta comes out to start a brawl with Bubba, leaving Hugh Morris on his own.
Why is, like, I understand why Tenta didn't cut his hair or shave or do any of the things before the pay-per-view match, but why are you still walking around like that? Like, and can you imagine how bad it must be to walk around like town and going around in your, you know, your normal live, your normal cities and looking like that?
You know, I'm gonna say this as nicely as possible. He never seemed to be a guy that really cared what he looked like.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. But even like Kane, like what he was talking about when they unmasked and his hair was like that and he had to like walk through airport security looking
oh
like
yeah
that, like how terrible that was. Just yes. Man. I don't know if I could do that.
No. Just real dedication. We get Eddie Guerrero against Psychosis. It's a fun match. It's what you'd expect from these two. Yeah. Eddie wins with the frog splash. Crowd's behind him, despite what you might have heard about when Eddie Guerrero developed a following in the recent week online. As it turns out, he was popular in the mid-90s as well.
No.
You know.
I heard he was only popular because people can't stand Chris Benoit anymore.
True.
Christ.
So absurd what people say on the internet.
I've never been more disappointed in you.
The
future of
the
world.
Terrible, man.
You missed the Eddie Guerrero B plus player stuff.
Yeah,
man.
I did. Great. Thank God. You know, between that and this era of sports shit posting, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it's not all awful. It's not great.
It's really not. We are dwindling. It is dire.
Mean Jeans with the Giant, Jimmy Hart and Kevin Sullivan. Jimmy Hart has no comment on Hogan. Kevin Sullivan said they spent a year trying to stop Hulkamania, then Hulk did it himself. Every time he looks in the mirror, he sees Chris Benoit. Giant says as long as he has the title, everything will be fine because he beat Hogan last fall for the title. Well, I have some news. Move on to the Nasty Boys against the Steiners. And first couple minutes, just Steiners just freaking throwing them around.
Yeah.
Just like any other Steiners match, but yeah. You know. Midway through the match, we go to the second hour of Nitro, so we pivot to Eric Bischoff and Bobby Heenan, get fireworks.
Something I never understood about Nitro is that they would shoot off the fireworks even if there was a match. Didn't you have just a more traditional way of doing this and wait until after it was done?
Well, you know, the other thing is you also hear, like, in some of these matches that the Disney fireworks show is going on, so it's very distracting.
They do this all the time too. It's not even just for this. It happens every Nitro.
Yeah.
Whether it's in an arena or not, it just never made any sense to me.
Yeah.
Sometimes they would even do it like above the ring while the wrestlers were competing. Like, how is that not like intensely distracting?
Oh, it probably was. I mean, Colonel Parker hits Jerry Sags with the cane while the ref is distracted. Scott Steiner gets the pin, so the Steiners are going to face Harlem Heat at Hog Wild. Nasty Boys are very upset. They understand why Hogan did what he did. Maybe they'll join the NWO. I mean, they probably will eventually, but...
Well, are you going to continue watching this?
At some point.
I will leave it at that.
Ric Flair is defending the United States Championship against Jim Powers. It's not a very good match. I mean, Flair gets the win. You know, Jim Powers is not very good.
No.
Mean Jeans with the Four Horsemen. They're not worried about the NWO. You get Chris Benoit against Craig Pittman. Benoit gets a quick win with the crossface. You know, kind of what you expect there. Then it's time for our main event. Sting against Arn Anderson. It looks like Hall and Nash have arrived. Good match, but everyone is focused on Hall and Nash, including Eric Bischoff and Bobby Heenan, so it kind of takes away from it a little bit. Sting gets the win with the sharpshooter, and security takes Hall and Nash away. Mean Gene's in the ring with Sting. Sting's not surprised at what Hall and Nash did, but he's surprised at Hogan, but Sting should have known. Hogan turned his back on everyone who supported him, and Sting won't stand for that. He's going to spend the next 3 years trying to get his revenge. So, Good for Sting. You know, he's got morals.
Yes.
Randy Savage is also here. He has a message for Hogan, but he's not allowed to say on TV what he wants to say. Mm. So. Mean Gene is with Hall and Nash now. Nash said WCW took a beating last night because Hogan told them exactly how it is. Next week, Hogan's going to be here. Mean Gene says so many people are disappointed in Hogan. Scott Hall says that Lex Luger didn't get hurt last night. He fainted when he saw them. They show the picture of some Bash at the Beach, and we are done.
We are done. And then we move on to next week's episode of Monday Nitro, also from Disney MGM Studios, of course. They show footage of Hogan tournament this week.
Well, you know, it's been a week. You can, I guess that's why they, like, I never understood why, like, oh, you own the rights. Why are you just showing pictures the night after? But I guess, yeah, it's the replays. Like,
yeah,
because WWE did that too for a long time.
I mean, technically, they've been doing that a lot recently too with their shows. They've been showing just stills of WrestleMania and whatnot.
Yeah.
But even though that's months after, they want you to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the still.
Yeah. Tony and Larry mentioned that the Giant's not here, Sting's not here, Randy Savage isn't here, so that does not seem great for Lex Luger, who I believe is the only one there. Not ideal.
Actually, hey, Rob, do you know, were these shows, like, were they taped? Like, did they tape two of them, or did they actually come back every week to do these?
That's something that I thought of earlier, but couldn't actually, like, find a definitive answer.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you look, let's see if I can pull it up real quick. Because, like, usually when you look on the cage match or whatever, like, it has the taping.
Oh, yeah. I see it says live on them all. So, okay.
Yeah, so they do Nitro, and then they do Saturday night the next night. And then just kind of keep at it. And yeah, it's cool. I mean.
Yeah, I'm just surprised they didn't try to, like, get to Nitro, I guess. I guess being live was probably more important than.
I mean, I think the other thing is, like, they only have room for, like, 400 people anyway, so you're probably going to be able to get people to show up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you are still in Florida where, and I don't think you had to, it's not like TNA where you had to actually get a ticket to the park, mm-hmm. like, because they're outside.
Yeah.
So. Steiner's against Ice Train, Scott Norton. Tony Schiavone says that Hulk Hogan needs to look at what Turner did for him since they air all of his bad movies. Which, they're all pretty bad.
True.
I mean.
True.
Scott Norton tries to leapfrog Rick Steiner. And Rick Steiner just kind of, like, catches him and suplexes him out of midair.
Yeah, that was impressive.
And then Scott pins Ice Train for the win. So Steiners are building some momentum.
Mm-hmm. They are gathering.
They're very good.
They really are.
They are.
Great team. You know, the thing about Scott Steiner is if you're like me, you only have, you know, his second WWE run for reference, but he's very good.
Yes.
And that's how I was with Kevin Nash for a long time too, maybe Kevin Nash isn't very good, but, you know, he's entertaining enough. But yeah, no, Scott Steiner's legitimately good though.
Yeah. I would have loved a Scott Steiner singles run in WWF when they were in there in like 93. That would have been legitimately amazing.
I think it was either Bruce or Pat wanted him to come in and win the Rumble.
Yeah. Well, that's what they said. Yeah, they were like, what if? You know, that would have been the Mania 9. It would have been Bret Hart versus Scott Steiner. Or at least that's what, you know, like they threw out there to Vince.
Yeah. Mean Gene's with Jimmy Hart and Kevin Sullivan. They just kind of repeat the same things I talked about last week. Get another Glacier vignette.
Blood runs cold.
Dean Malenko's here against Billy Kidman.
A very, very spring chicken, Billy Kidman.
Yeah. He's
before he turns into a heroin addict and becomes a member of
Yes.
You know that was the backstory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Still doesn't know how to do the shooting star press, so that never changed. Then he taps out to the clover leaf. Kevin Green is here.
He is.
He's on the Panthers now.
Yeah, he's on the Panthers now. This is their second season in existence.
He tells Mean Gene that he's upset about Hulk Hogan. He worked hard, took his vitamins, said his prayers. He's here to finish things with Mongo, though. Doesn't want to wait any longer. If anyone sees Mongo, send him to Kevin. But then Kevin leaves, so, like, probably should have stuck around a little bit longer. You know?
Not the brightest bulb, you know?
Harlem Heat's in action against Enos and Slater. Colonel Parker's the manager of both these teams, which is awkward. But Sherry is also the manager for All Meets. They have two managers. Mm-hmm. Sherry kisses Dick Slater while the ref is distracted. Booker rolls him up for the win. So both are tag teams that are going to meet at Hog Wild, building some momentum.
Yes.
Ty should do it. Medusa is in action against Malia Hosaka. It was fine. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know what the thing is about women's matches in 1996. Medusa gets the win. You know, they're, I believe Hog Wild is where she faces Bull Nakano, which is, I think their match, when did they have a match? They had a match in WWF that I think was better than Hog Wild.
I think so, yeah.
It's SummerSlam 1994, SummerSlam. Actually.
Yeah.
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 SummerSlam. Yeah. I think, I think Nakano comes out in, what is it, a Suzuki or something? Some sort of Japanese bike that, like, supposed to get heel heat with the Hog Wild crew.
Oh, man. I should watch that show. Like, I wasn't going to watch the pay-per-views because they're mostly bad, but that one's an experience, man.
Oh, yeah.
Which one, is it this one or next year where Heenan's just clearly drunk?
I think it's every year.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, listen, you're outside, it's, you know, 100 degrees, and you might as well. Why not?
There's nothing to do there besides drink anyways. Like,
no. We start the second hour, and Hall and Nash are on top of the MGM Studios entrance, and they cover the WCW sign with the letters NWO.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Everyone's very distracted because they're just sitting on top of the entrance, mm-hmm. so no one's really paying attention to Meng against Arn Anderson. Also, it took me a while to figure it out. Jimmy Hart's got like a siren on his megaphone, and he just uses it pretty much the whole time that he's out there. Very annoying. Meng gets the win, though. Mongo comes out to look for Kevin Green, but Mean Gene tells him that he left already. Mongo says if Kevin Green wants to fight, they can fight whatever. Deborah talks about how Mongo is a better football player than Kevin Green, which is probably not accurate, but you know.
No, not nearly accurate.
I mean, Kevin Green is among...
He's third all time in career sacks.
Yeah.
Unless someone like passed him, but I'm pretty sure.
No, I think he's still third. Yeah. Like, I don't know who would have passed him. There's not any active players that are like...
Because the only person that I could think of off the top of my head would have been Julius Peppers. Peppers was fourth. He finished a half sack behind him.
Oh, I was Freeney. He seemed pretty close, probably.
Freeney's 18th, actually. Also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's Bruce Smith with 200, Reggie White with 198, and then Kevin Green with 160. Like I said, Peppers with 159.5. So Peppers was really close.
Got to come back. Got to get one more.
Just let's get a half. Yeah, one to pass, half to tie. Come on.
We get Eddie Guerrero against Chris Benoit, which really one of their first matches, I would have to imagine.
At least WCW, yeah, I would imagine.
Hall and Nash aren't on top of the stage anymore, so who knows where they are. Not ideal. Dean Malenko comes out during this match and throws Benoit off the post, and Benoit gets counted out. So they're going to start a feud here.
They are.
Big Bubba's facing Lex Luger for the WCW television title, but Hogan and Hall and Nash come out, beat up both guys. The match gets thrown out. Hogan says the NWO will rule the wrestling world. Tells Mean Gene he doesn't care about the children or the fans. Hogan says he'll always be bigger than wrestling. They'll keep building the NWO as well, so they're going to keep adding members. Hogan challenges the Giant. And the Steiners and Arn and Meng all come out, but we're out of time. So, you know, it's, I think it's the only one where Hogan actually showed up. So,
believe so. Also, They were about 15, 20 matches deep at this point.
Oh, wow.
Benoit and Guerrero. They had,
they had a bunch of New Japan.
Yeah, and they had a bunch on WCW. Also, their first one was all the way back on the 7th episode of Nitro.
Damn.
Back in October of 95.
Saturday
Night Worldwide
match. I think that was the one Nitro from the Rosemont Horizon.
No, this was in Albany, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
They might have wrestled at the Rosemont Horizon, but
yeah, because they ran one Nitro there, and I know one of the two of them had a pretty big match, I believe. But yeah,
seems right. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep moving on here.
Indeed.
Oh, that Hogan promo though, the Savage parts were, I don't know, man. That was a little I'm hoping he got some clearance on some of that stuff, because he talks about like having to console Liz, and definitely makes some innuendos about Savage not being able to get it up, and just some wild things in there that I'm just like, maybe this is why Savage doesn't like you. But then I'm like, well, Savage did like work with you still for like 4 more years, so
that's true. But you know, I'm sure it went over very well with Randy. Move on to July 22nd, still at Disney MGM Studios. They open the show talking about Muhammad Ali lighting the Olympic flame and Shaq signing with the Lakers. Yeah, both were recently on WCW television. Mm-hmm. So, and then tonight, the Giant will answer Hulk Hogan's challenge. So,
yes.
Squire Dave Taylor against Scott Norton leads off the show. Scott Norton throws him over the top rope, which you can't do in WCW. Not allowed to do that. So the match is over.
Over the top rope disqualification. Quite the rule.
Strange rule, but you know.
Yeah, it's one of those holdover from the NWA.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mean Gene was with three of the horsemen. Gene wanted to know if Arn Anderson was concerned that Ric Flair wasn't there yet. He's not. Rick likes to make a grand entrance, and he will be there. Mongo was looking forward to their chance to take on Savage, Luger, and Sting tonight. That match sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Once again, Benoit says that he's silent but violent.
Yeah. Really, please, stop saying that.
Please. So we get our first or second match of the night, I should say, with BK Wall Street versus Conan.
Two guys I absolutely do not want to watch.
Oh my god! I was just like, what a perfect match for me to have to sit through here. Like, I could not stand. It was only five minutes and 17 seconds is what it says it got.
It felt very long.
Oh, it felt all of an hour's worth of time because it was just so long.
Oh man, yeah. And Mike Rotunda hits a Samoan drop and goes for the cover, but Conan rolls him over and gets the win. So. That's over. Mean Gene's with Sting and Luger and Savage. Luger says Flair is probably in a limo or hotel room, but they're here ready to make a statement. I don't know why they're letting Luger talk. Sting is also curious where Flair is, but he doesn't care. He's ready to take out the horseman tonight. Savage says he wants Hogan and Hall and Nash here, and he wants Flair here and take out all of his enemies tonight. And then we get...
an eight-man tag. Alex Wright, Joe Gomez, Jim Powers, and the Renegade. It's Humorous, Kevin Sullivan, the Barbarian, and the Leprechaun.
There's like two guys here that I want to watch. I understand why they do it, you know, once you see kind of how it plays out. We also get a montage of Alex Wright's team walking shirtless at the Grand Floridian.
For the record, they completely dropped the ball on Alex Wright.
Oh, yeah.
They just...
Yeah.
If Wright went to the World Wrestling Federation, he would have been a fucking star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Far and away.
So early in the match, we get a disturbance in the production area, so I send a camera back there, and as it turns out, the Outsiders are in the control room. So they're kind of messing around, not really doing much.
Nope. Just
causing a ruckus.
Yep.
Security takes them out, go back to the match. Who knows what happened during the match, but also who really cares? Giant comes out, chokeslams Renegade, ends in disqualification, Dungeon of Doom stand tall. Mean Gene interviews the Giant to see if he accepts Hogan's challenge, which he does. So he'll chokeslam him in the middle of the ring at Hog Wild. Once again, good luck.
Yes, good luck.
I just have to say, Cage Match has the Leprechaun listed as Braun the Leprechaun. And I don't think I remember seeing the Leprechaun ever again.
Well, in fairness, it's very bad, so, you know. Hold on, I'm curious real quick. Let's see if we can. The Leprechaun worked, it's Buddy Lee Parker. You know what?
I would never have guessed that.
That makes a lot of sense, I guess. Like, that's the only time they ever did the Leprechaun. They repackaged him immediately. You know. Wow.
Was this like the final straw for like Kevin Sullivan's? Like, we can't let Kevin Sullivan do any more Dungeon of Doom shit.
Yes.
We're going to kill the Dungeon of Doom.
Also, another thing about these shows, just kind of in general, is they very rarely put the ring announcer audio through the television, so it's it's a real guess who's coming out at any given time.
And that trend continues on Nitro for a really long time. I've never understood it.
Yeah.
I've never understood
it. So if you
don't turn the mic volume up loud for Penzer at all, and then they only do sometimes.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But there's a lot of weird things that they do with the production because there's oftentimes delayed reactions to theme songs. Like, all the time on Nitro in 97, the NWO's music will hit at the start of the show while commentary is talking, and it takes them like 10 seconds for them to realize it.
Yeah.
Very odd.
Well, that's
Go ahead.
Well, that's something too, like in the Kevin Nash Broken Skull sessions, he was talking to Bischoff and he's like, you know, wait till you get up there and you see like the production they have at WWE compared to what they have at WCW. And yeah, I mean, it shows like.
Yeah. And that's actually what I was going to get to is WCW at this point doesn't have many people that are just WCW. It's like, I know they always talked about how, especially like the cameramen, were just whoever they sent from Turner, like whoever Turner had left over that they could use either in the area or like nearby that they could get because they didn't have anybody designated for WCW.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Like, but yeah, we get DDP against Prince Iaukea. We join the match in progress and DDP gets a quick win with the Diamond Cutter. It is weird. Like DDP's just kind of there doing his thing at the moment. You know, not a big star yet.
Not just
there because he's friend.
Yeah, he's not. Well, he's not the people's champ yet. He's not the DDP that we know that you get to see future. He's still that like sleazy like Jersey con artist type dude.
Yeah. We get Dean Malenko against Chavo Guerrero. Move to hour two in the middle of this match, so get some fireworks, which means some rare excitement during a Dean Malenko match. Bischoff and Heenan come in and their mics are all messed up, which again, just another production thing that's not great. Not a great match. It's very boring. We get Meng against Ice Train. Big Ice Train fan. I don't know why Ice Train didn't pan out. He's good.
Yeah, he's pretty solid.
Scott Norton comes out and attacks Meng to help Ice Train because of disqualification. So those two are not on the same page, struggling to coexist.
Yep. Indeed.
We get another Glacier vignette, except this one features him doing his weird karate instead of just blood runs cold. It's not great. Talked about that a little bit earlier. Psychosis against Eddie Guerrero. Eddie gets a victory, keeps building momentum in advance of his U.S. title match at Hog Wild. A good match. I mean, you know, those two guys.
Yeah.
You know how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then it's time for Steve McMichael, Chris Benoit, and Ric Flair against Sting, Lex Luger, and Randy Savage. Mongo and Benoit come out, but Ric Flair is still not there. There's a limo backstage, and Arn looks into it, but it doesn't seem to have Flair in it because he just kind of leaves. So
yeah.
A lot of people are worried that Flair joined the New World Order. So Arn steps in for Flair. Very intrigued who's in the limo. Savage hits Benoit with the briefcase behind the ref's back, and Luger pins him for the victory. We got 2 minutes till the show ends. Still don't know who's in the limo. Choosing instead to let Lex Luger scream and let Sting talk about horoscopes. Randy Savage is going to beat up Hogan before he can even get to the ring to face the Giant. Let me go off the air without ever saying who's in the limo.
Good old-fashioned clipping.
It's not, though. They never say it. It bothered me. Like, I don't get...
No, yeah, they always do.
Why was there just...
They won't tell you for actually a few more weeks, too.
Yeah, they won't. Not for a few more weeks.
I guess I'll keep watching. But it's like how they kind of alluded on the Bash at the Beach broadcast. Like, oh, maybe Eric Bischoff got, like, kidnapped or whatever. And they just don't bring it back up again. He's just not on the show the whole time. And they just, you know. All right. We got one more. July 29th, 1996. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash attack Sting in the parking lot after a house show in Cincinnati earlier in the week, so that's kind of rude. Shouldn't do that. Mike Enos faces Hacksaw Jim Duggan to open the show. Duggan pulls a roll of tape from his tights, hits Mike Enos with it for the win. After the match, Duggan's with Mean Gene, wants to know why Hogan turned his back on everyone. They used to be friends. Duggan says Hogan's a great technical wrestler. He's not. He doesn't want to wrestle him. He wants to beat him up. So everyone is mad at Hulk Hogan.
Yes, they are. And then we.
How much has changed since?
It's true.
Not much has changed at all. So we got the 6-man tag we were supposed to get last week. Trying it again. They all start brawling right away. Savage is beating Flair up. They end up on the entranceway before heading back to the ring. Pretty fun stuff.
Very good match. I enjoyed a lot. Jimmy Hart says that the outsiders in the back. Cameraman heads back there. Gets on the apron and just kind of begs everyone to come help. So they abandon their match. Come help. We see Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and they have baseball bats, and they've taken out Arn Anderson and Buff Bagwell. Rey Mysterio comes out of a production trailer and tries to dive at Kevin Nash, and Nash catches him and then throws him off the side of the trailer. Nash gets in their hall, or Nash and Hall get in their limo, and it drives away, but Randy Savage decides to jump on top of it. Just kind of stays there as it leaves. And, yeah, everyone in the back is real concerned, and they kind of linger on this for like 20 minutes. Which is interesting. Cause like, that's not something that really ever happened.
No.
You know, Ray and Arn get taken to the hospital. Second hour starts and Bobby Heenan says that, he's not comfortable here. He leaves. So
this is a seminal moment in wrestling television history.
Yeah. You know, we came into the show and the announced matches were like, you know, the American males are going to have a match. Arn Anderson was going to face the Giant, I believe. And, like Rey Mysterio was going to face Eddie Guerrero. And now all of those guys are incapacitated. Yeah. So they don't have matches.
Nope. So they have to substitute matches.
Which the live crowd did not love this, like, 30 minutes lingering backstage. But, nope. You know, what you're doing is you're alienating, you know, 400 people or whatever just to, you know, do something that you've never seen. It's worth it. I mean, it sucks for the live crowd, but, you know, it's the right decision.
Yeah.
I'm
interested to know. I didn't check, but like, I do wonder how the ratings, like the quarters looked for that. Cause I mean, it was like a legit 20, 30 minutes of that whole thing playing out. So yeah. I do wonder if they lost audience on TV for that.
Mm-hmm. So we get a match that's finally thrown together. The Steiners are facing High Voltage. Rick Steiner, instead of going on the apron, stays on the floor so he can watch and make sure no one comes back.
Nice touch.
Scott does most of the work, and then it's Pile Driver for the win. Big Bubba's in action against Eddie Guerrero.
Bischoff said that there were national news outlets calling about the attacks.
Probably not, but you know.
Probably not. TV audience. You can't really say yes or no to that.
It's
back in that day.
People were calling.
Well, I mean, you could always just say it was CNN.
Yeah.
That's true. Jimmy Hart throws Big Bubba his megaphone to hit Eddie with, but Eddie moves and gets a roll-up for the win. And then we get our first, the following announcement's been paid for by the New World Order.
First one ever.
Yeah. Hall and Nash and Hogan are in black and white. They're just going to keep doing this. There's nothing anyone can do about it because they make the decisions now. Billionaire Ted can't do anything about it. Eric Bischoff can't do anything about it. They're going to keep adding people too, which they are, but
they are.
You know. Then our main event is now Greg Valentine against the Giant, which is a bummer, you know. Giant chokeslams Greg Valentine off the top rope and then chokeslams him again for the win. Tells Hogan that that's what's going to happen to him at Hog Wild. Mean Gene comes into the ring, interviews Giant, and he does a Hogan impression to explain to people how easy it was to fall for Hogan's con. If WCW doesn't hang together, they're going to all hang separately. And that's it.
Yes.
You know, it's a very strong month of television, and I think they did a good job capitalizing on the NWO stuff, even, you know, with not having Hogan there every week.
I would agree. They did some really cool stuff with follow-ups. They made sure that the NWO had a presence on pretty much every program. They kept the fear, and like I said, I think they ended the month of July with a bang.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is a good idea.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this. Yeah. You know, we were going to...
No,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was interested. So, I know Rob doesn't know who the fourth man is. Chris, you know who the fourth man is, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Knowing what we know about, like, the lawsuits that they've been doing, especially with, like, you know, what had happened already earlier in the month. Don't you think it's pretty stupid that they did this for the fourth man? Like in a long roundabout, trying not to give Rob too many clues.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid, and also like it just in the long run, it just never makes that much sense, especially after the big shoe drops at the end with Bischoff.
Yeah,
it's all just really silly.
Yeah, it's just really weird because I was just putting it together, like, okay, they have that lawsuit, and then they do this, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't make sense to keep going with litigation for it. But no, I think I liked these episodes, and I like that. Every episode was about the NWO, but it didn't feel like they just were hammering you every single time because they weren't out there the whole time. And I feel like if this were WWE now, we would have had to have seen the NWO like six times every week to hit home the part that they are the top guys now and they're the ones taking over.
Yeah. No, it was cool. Like, you know, you could, you know, not show them, but have them just kind of be on everyone's mind. Everyone's just kind of bringing them up in interviews and stuff and then, you know, getting onto their other stuff and just kind of having multiple feuds that are kind of interwoven like that. And I think that's a thing that we don't see just really in wrestling anywhere anymore. You know, WWE, AEW doesn't do it too much. Just NXT doesn't do it too much. It's something that they could go back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy too. Like, I mean, they even had Rey Mysterio cut a promo about how, you know, Hulk Hogan's heel turn and how that affects, you know, the little kids in Mexico, and, you know, it's cut it in Spanish and in English. And it's like, man, if you would have kept doing that, you know, every single week with the cruiserweights, they might have been more over.
Yeah.
You know, giving them more time.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah.
That'll do it for us here. We may be back in August. We're obviously a little busy. So we'll see how that all goes down, but we'll be plotting. Hopefully we'll be back for some more Retro Review podcast next month. So as always, you can subscribe to the Barbershare Network's Patreon at patreon.com/barbershare network. A new episode of Summer Sessions recently dropped on July 23rd. A new episode of the WWE Top 25 posts will be up next week at some point. Meanwhile, you can find all the Barbershare podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Spotify. We've had this week a new episode of Random Access Podcast, a new episode of First Black Champ, and last week, of course, we had a new episode of Ball Don't Lie. I imagine there will be some stuff about, you know, the NBA draft, and also I imagine a 40-40 club episode will be dropped about baseball and the trade deadline and how the Dodgers managed to pull off getting Scherzer and Turner.
Yeah.
And just gave up only Caper Ruiz and Josiah Gray and two mid-level prospects. They're also, of course, getting Corey Seager back tomorrow, Mookie Betts eventually, Clayton Kershaw. So, you know,
yeah,
I guess good luck to everyone else. But yeah, so, and, you know, keep robbing your thoughts as Anthony Rizzo got traded to the Yankees and Chris Bryant may be on the move as well as Craig Kimbrell, who Rob is back.
Correct.
But. Anyways, so yeah, that'll do it. You can follow Chris Osborne at Kitman99. You can follow Rob at RobLeader31. You can follow me at Chris M. Novak because I'm back on Twitter after my self-imposed exile for a couple of days. And yeah, that'll do it for us here. You know, enjoy your night, and you know, stay safe, get vaccinated, mask up, do all that fun stuff so that you don't get sick.